Hail cheaters and welcome to the Always Cheating Podcast. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
Excellent, Josh. Wow. Like, what a way to announce the new Premier League season, FPL season. Points. So many points this weekend.
Yeah, something for everybody. I felt like if you went with a like very standard kind of a term that gets used a lot is the template team, right? Like a team that looks very similar to what you might see on websites and social media, things like that. If you went with that, that was good. If you decided to kind of take some risks and go with Sar and maybe a couple of Chelsea players, and like that worked as well. If you, you know, took a gamble on someone like Benrahma, that worked out. There was very few combinations outside of not owning Bruno and Salah. If you didn't have those two, you were in big trouble.
Yeah, but, it's like walking into a casino and somebody's yelling like, so many ways to win. And that was the way FPL was inviting us all in. Like, it doesn't matter which slot machine you sit at, the coins will probably be pouring out of them. And yeah, I think we do have to talk a little bit about that template idea, because there are bound to be managers listening to this episode that are like, what did I do to deserve this by just not having Bruno and Salah, and suddenly I'm 40 to 50 points behind in my mini leagues already? And it sucks. It really does. I think we both want to start by saying like, wow, this was such a fun weekend. If FPL has one flaw, it is that the Salah Bruno sort of phenomenon is any weekend where you try to break the norm, you can get totally buried.
Yeah. Totally. But I think that it's rare that those two will combine for 37 points combined in an opening weekend. I mean, it was absolutely insane, right? Was it 4 goals and 2 assists total across the board? Absolutely ridiculous. And I mean, Salah could have had more. I mean, it was kind of a wild. Bruno's were like a little, I don't want to say flukier, but they were sort of like,
one of them was probably offside, I guess it's fair to say.
Well, not anymore, not because of the thick. I'm actually so happy that there was a marginal offside that they told us. I mean, so yesterday was not just one of the best Premier League match days that I can remember going back quite a long ways. It was one of the best days straight up that I think I've had in about 18 months. I was so happy yesterday. It was,
tell us why.
Well, I mean, the fantasy thing is obviously part of it. And like, maybe, you know, whether fantasy should be a serious driver of this much of a driver of my happiness is an open question. But I mean, clearly it's my preferred hobby, right? Yeah. It's the thing I really enjoy doing. And that's where so many of my friends are now too, right? Yeah. It's where so many people I've gotten to know, and it's where I like to talk and whatever. You know, it's okay to have a hobby, however niche it is, right? Some people are into cosplay, right? And fantasy is a kind of sports cosplay, isn't it? Right? You get to kind of pretend that
we're not full kit wankers at this point yet though, Josh. So
So it was the matches were on, and it was a beautiful day in New York. I went to the Black Horse for the second half of a match. And it was just a very good day. I got 20,000 steps on the day, Brendan. I'm trying to be a little bit healthier.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I had a great night listening to records and hanging out in the evening. I don't want to get, you know, too into the details of my own personal life here, but it was just a great day. I was so happy. Yeah. And I was like, this is what, and I know that there's all kinds of horrible things going on in the world, but it felt like for one day that things were kind of normal.
Sure. And I think you're setting the tone correctly there, Josh, for you personally. And as we try to make fantasy fun again at Always Cheating, separating the PL from the FPL, to watch that full game week slate of fixtures and see fans maximized in the stands, to feel that through the TV broadcast here in the States, there was a magic in the air where it felt, and it always helps when tons of goals are scored, but there was that kind of magic in the air where it felt like something special was happening, and we've got our game back.
It was great. And the fans in the stands obviously was such a, it was just wonderful. It was, I mean, even today, right? I mean, they do Spurs win that match today if it happens last season and there's nobody in the stands? Man City probably win that, right?
And what we saw throughout the whole weekend was home teams by and large having the advantage. We're going to talk about Watford and Brentford, of course, during this episode. But across the board, home teams, Newcastle, even in the first half against West Ham, like off to a great start. Credit to their amazing fans at St. James Park. So I think those fans definitely showed what they were made of and how they helped their teams this weekend.
Yeah, interesting too that you had 10 wins and 10 losses, no draws on opening weekend, which I didn't look it up, but that feels unusual to me that you would start off a season with no draws. In my head, I had this idea that, and maybe this is just, it's changed the last couple of years, but this idea that it used to be kind of cagey the opening weekend. And I think that was definitely not the case in any match that was played this weekend. So let's get into our teams a little bit. I had a good game week. Very good game week. Very excellent. I had 101 points finished. I'm in the 316,000, I guess, is my rank, right? Which in some ways you're like 316,000 doesn't seem that high, but it's out of 7 million managers, right? So it's in the top, whatever it is, top 5% at the start of the season, which I think is just a fantastic place to be. I feel very happy about that. And I would say my team did not change that much from the team that you and I discussed a couple of days ago. I really was struggling with Fernandez, Salah, and Greenwood were really locks for my team. I thought Greenwood played great, and I feel pretty good about him starting moving forward, even as other players come in, because I just thought that he can just play him in so many different places. There's really no reason for him to move to the bench. I don't know why they would. I mean, Dan James seems like the obvious candidate for an incoming benching. And Antonio obviously played great. And that, you know, it's an interesting thing with Antonio, because you and I both were sort of, I guess I was a little down on him on our forward podcast. And I you know, ultimately you and I both had him in our draft teams going into game week one. So we talked about him on last week's podcast. There's still a little bit of worry just because he's so injury prone. And ultimately, in some ways, he still doesn't have an incredible track record as a striker. He still has, I think he has 48 goals in his career in the Premier League, but he was on fire in the preseason, continues to be on fire. Yeah. And so he was great. And then we'll talk about Benrahma in just a second here. Mm-hmm. But then the Tsimikas versus Jota gamble, I feel like that one worked out. You call it a draw, I suppose. Jota did outscore Tsimikas 8-6, but Tsimikas is 3.5 million cheaper. So you're basically getting two extra points for 3.5 million. So I think that, but ultimately I think maybe Jota is a safer pick in some ways too. So I think that there's different ways to look at that, but I think you can call that one a draw right now. And then the one thing I regret a little bit is Gundogan, who I thought I was really buying because I wasn't enamored with any particular midfielder in that kind of range in game week one itself. And so I thought, you know what, let me just focus on game week two and I'll just get Gundogan early. I don't want to pre-bank a transfer. And so I, you know, cause I got one thing I was thinking about was Pulisic and then moving to Gundogan. And I was like, well, in case I got other injuries and I want to be in that position. So Gundogan was okay. I mean, Man City just don't seem like they're quite at full, you know, at full, all, whatever, all systems, all systems revving or whatever. And now it looks like he may have injured his shoulder too. So
that was an incredible injury he got at the end of the Spurs game, where they both teams and the referee just left Gundogan on the sidelines to just like writhe around and suffer.
No one
was taking it seriously, and the med team had to like go all the way around the pitch, and it was really kind of sad.
It was a very physical match. I have to say that as far as the intensity goes, that even though it wasn't, I don't think an especially well played match, I thought the physicality of it was at a pretty high level. So the optimistic way that I'm looking at this is the Gundogan possible injury doesn't look great. Maybe it saves me from myself a little bit, and I just get out of it's a ready made excuse to get out of the Gundogan punt early and just move on to somebody new. Danny Ings with a miracle penalty late. What a wonderful, that is truly, that's when you know you're having a great fantasy weekend when Danny Ings in the 90 whatever the seventh minute or something gets someone's penalty. Took it pretty well too. I he's had some penalty issues over the years, and so to watch him take that penalty well was a good sign. So I finished 101, and I actually lost our head-to-head $50 cup matchup this week, Brandon, because you finished on, was it 107 points all total?
106. And okay, Unreal score. Going into Sunday, I was on 80 points even. And one of the changes I made from when last we potted was bringing Benrahma into the midfield. And I had tapped him last week as probably a player that is flying under the radar. And, you know, this is the always cheating bump, Josh. Like, suddenly, Benrahma is all over social media. Yep. I will not take credit for it, but I was really pleased to see all the enthusiasm about Ben Rama sort of percolating going into game week one. And so between him and Antonio and 1 point from Soufal, it bumped me all the way up to 106. And like, it's a dream start. It really is. But even at 106, you can't crack the top 100K overall. So that puts me at 122,000. And I'm buzzing, Josh, from this great start.
I wonder, actually, it's possible you are inside the top 100K. There may be so many managers bunched up in that range that it's possible you're just outside or close to it. Right now, it's even when you're even on points, it's just so early in the season that there can be 20,000-30,000 players that all share the same rank.
I think that's important to note, Josh, because so many of these points are coming from the same two players, Bruno and Salah. You might be looking at your OR and thinking, I've got a lot of ground to make up already. But yes, it is so tightly packed, various pelotons and whatnot, that 1 point here or there in game week two is going to catapult you up hundreds of thousands of ranks. So that's true. Yeah. And just to touch upon the big things that changed in my thinking since last week going into game week one, it was definitely Leeds. And that feels very much like Neo in the Matrix dodging bullets, where I think a lot of us just suddenly, after talking Leeds up all preseason,
totally
just started to get this feeling like a ripple in the force that this isn't right. And I think it's strange that I gravitated away from Leeds. Like, Bamford and Rafinha became Benrahma and Antonio. And I think it really is the power of the fixtures. And that is, I think, what FPL managers, if you're feeling like you're out of control already in game week one, what you can control is just assessing these key matchups and these key fixtures. And West Ham, their first three fixtures were just shaping up better. It's the story is obviously not written, which assets are going to be better long-term picks, Rafinha or Benrahma, Antonio or Bamford. But I just feel really fortunate that I came out on the right side of that one. And then, so you mentioned the Tsimikas versus Jota matchup and how Jota comes out 2 points ahead this week. You said, Josh, you think Jota is the safer pick. If I have any anxiety going into Burnley, it is that Jota is not as safe as Tsimikas, because
I guess Firmino, I mean, safe over 15 weeks or something like that. Not necessarily this. Yeah, give me two.
Yeah. Jota probably does outscore Tsimikas over 15 weeks versus just the next three. But this is the curse of having a flyer in game week one. Now, Josh, we're in the position of like, what do we do to keep all this ground that we've gained? It's like trying to move the Maginot line in World War One. Okay, now we've got this territory, let's hold it. And I look at Jota and I'm like, is Jota risking me holding this land that I've carved out?
Well, Brandon, this is what I am trying to instill in you going into this season, which is to take your FPL anxiety and turn it into optimism. All right.
Uh-huh,
so the way to think about it is, I am at 120K overall after game week one. I am going to destroy this season. And this is the year I finish in the top 100.
Yeah.
So I think that's the approach. I mean, I with 101 at the top 300K, I feel great. I mean, that is exactly where I hope to be. I just wanted to be in the top 500 if I could, or even the top. Really, I mean, there's 7 million managers just over that right now who've registered for the game. And they were actually already eliminating duplicate accounts, like teams with the duplicate managers. So that is like a fairly clean number. So so if you're in the top 700K, that's a great spot to be too. You're in the top 10% overall. And as you said, if you aren't, you could move a million spots in a week right now.
Hopefully
not backwards if possible, but that does bring me to question number two, though. And sort of in this theme, Brandon, of transfers and kind of plotting your next move. Shiv says, is the theme of the podcast, the template works? And I think in some ways it's an interesting question. Certainly when you look at Bruno and Salah, I think the answer is clearly yes. Like, get the highest owned players. If you look at Luke Shaw, right? 55% owned. Mm-hmm. Pretty mediocre game, honestly. Picked up a late yellow card. I mean, this is exactly what I was getting from Shaw every week, the final 10 weeks of the season. I sort of, I honestly just caught him because at the end of the, tend to be cliche here, but at the end of the day, going into game week one, I just thought, I don't want to go into this weekend stressing out about this Man United game because I don't have a player who's 55% owned.
Yeah.
But ultimately this is kind of the Shaw experience. It's not a, he's not a rock solid Diaz type, or he's no Tsimikas, Brandon. Okay. I mean,
I agree. Shaw looked pretty jaded by the end of that match. And he was just kind of booting the ball around, not really passing to his teammates. I didn't really understand that performance, but on Salah and Bruno, the reason that these guys are priced as high as they are and have this high ownership is they become template is because these guys are so consistent. Why does everyone have Salah over Mane? Well, Mane could blow Salah out of the water any given week, but Salah is the more consistent asset. Fernandez, I mean, you're a Greenwood owner, Josh. Like, Greenwood had probably the best finish of those five goals that Manchester United scored. Yeah. Yeah. But Fernandez is just he's the most consistent FPL asset because he was the most consistently in front of goal near the 6-yard box, weirdly. And so this is like I was saying at the start of the pod, it's you could consider it a flaw in the FPL game that you can't go Mane instead of Salah without getting buried. But you also just have to respect the fact that these are the most consistent players season to season. That's why they get this level of ownership. And whether you want to play that game or not, you do have to respect it. And how the game ultimately will be won across 38 game weeks is, will you choose the right week to not be on Salah or Fernandez? And if you do, then you will have the last laugh. So you've got 37 more weeks to figure out which handful of weeks that's going to be. But generally, I think the word template is used more than the word consistent. And I think that might be a flaw in our perspective.
I think that's true. I think what we're going to start seeing now, I think, is at least a difference in the captaincy. I mean, Salah finished on 17 points, Fernandez on 20. Those are incredibly high returns. I don't see those getting... I would be surprised if either of them... I mean, 20 points is just a lot. It's just very rare that you see a player get a hat trick in a match. It was Bruno's first hat trick for Man United. He may have had higher points hauls just because he may have picked up a couple more assists to go with some goals in a couple of matches. But it just so happened that it was this first week when those returns were big. But I think now we have a real captaincy debate between those two, which I think is great. Add Lukaku in a few weeks, and things are going to start mixing up really quickly. And I think there's still a lot of room. I mean, Greenwood and Gundogan, I think there's in my team, for example, are the two kind of low ownership players that I have. I think even those three, even just three, four, five different players, that's enough for you to see a really big range of scores this week. As you know, I mean, even among people who had Fernandez and Salah, I think you were seeing somewhere between, 95 and 115. And I know I was talking to our friend producer, Mike, who was like, I think he had like 89 points and he was feeling bummed out. And I was saying to him that it's honestly just because 100 is such an unusual number for people to consistently get in a non double game week and just a normal week where teams aren't playing twice to make up, whatever FA Cup commitments or whatever. So it's just very rare for that to happen. And so as a result, it makes it seem like you've really been bummed out. But if this were a week where somebody got 62 points and you were on 47, you'd be like, whatever, it's game week one. And I think that 100 just makes everything seem so much more extreme.
Definitely. 100 is the notch in the bedpost sort of number that a lot of FPL managers have used through the years. So I agree. That makes it feel a little different.
All right. So we're going to get into today's theme in just a second here. It's overperformers, underperformers, and head scratchers after game week two. Two quick things. One is an alert. And this is something that I feel like I wasn't taking as seriously as I should until now as I start to think about some transfers I might make this week. Yeah. And that is a reminder that the international break is after game week three. Now, typically in a normal kind of in a, you know, in a time of the Premier League where COVID isn't such a major factor. It's usually after game week four. And so after game week three, we're going to have this international break. We'll be off for a week. And what makes this kind of tricky is unfortunately COVID. And so Rafinha, Alisson, Firmino, Richarlison, Eder, and Gabriel Jesus have all been called up for World Cup qualifying. And because South America is squeezing an extra match in, they may miss game week four due to self-quarantine, right? The last qualifier is September 9th. And game week four matches kick off on September 11th. If everyone stays for that third World Cup qualifier, and which they may, because we're not talking about a friendly here, right? We're talking about a World Cup qualifier, pretty important thing. So if they do that, then it's possible all of those managers could miss game week four. But Brandon, it gets worse because
go on.
The Argentines have not called up their players yet, and that could also see Emi Martinez and Emi Buendia also leave for
not one but two Emmys, Josh.
Exactly, on the same team, no less. So we could be in a position where a lot of really key players can't actually play in game week four. And I bring this up A as like a public service announcement, and B, I was thinking a little bit about Rafinha and Buendia as possible Gundogan replacements, but I think the fact that they could be missing a game week just 2 weeks from now really gives me pause and makes me feel like maybe those aren't the players I want to consider. So just throwing that out there as a note to people. And again, it may be that they work it out so that anyone who has to come back to England and self-quarantine for a few days doesn't play in that game week three qualifier. But that's not how these national teams typically work. They're not super concerned about the Premier League and their success. They're concerned about their own national teams and how they do. So
and not to give the players short shrift, I remember this was reporting around the Copa America, and Brazil was thinking of boycotting the Copa America because of corruption within the Brazilian government and how the tournament was being run. However, all the players were 100% committed to reporting to South America for World Cup qualifying, because at least from the Brazilian point of view, there is nothing more important to them than going to the World Cup. So that would be the last thing that especially the Brazilian players from this reporting I was reading would be willing to give up. And I'm sure the same could be said of most, if not all the countries in South America.
If you haven't seen the Emi Martinez hip thrust after winning Copa America, imagine what he'll do when Argentina is playing in the World Cup. So I don't mean to end this intro section on a down note here, but it's just a word to the wise. Just keep an eye out. And maybe if you're on the fence between game week, you know, three and game week four, for example, and thinking about whether you want to bank a transfer, hold one for later, I would really consider holding one, because I think there's a good chance that some players in your squad will not play in game week four if they're South American. So just throwing that out there, could be an issue for some people. Brandon, one last thing, Patreon. I want to say thank you to everyone. We had so many new patrons join this week. It was really heartening. We really put a lot of work into the preseason, and all the people who came and joined and supported the podcast on Patreon, it was really validating. If you want to do that yourself, it was kind of incredible. It was, I thought it was beyond Twitter. Like, I could not believe how active and interesting the conversation was on our main thread chat this weekend, and just lots of stuff going on all over the place on our Slack. And of course, we're doing bonus podcasts every single week for our Patreon supporters. We have a manager of the month award. We're giving a brand new Always Cheating Baseball. It's our baseball tee that we're giving out. And that's in August of this month. It's going to go to the Patreon supporter who scores the highest score. So if you are interested in winning that manager of the month award, I think we should keep it open for one more week, Brandon. I guess we don't want anyone coming in like the last day of August, right? So
not going to happen.
Up until the start of game week two, if you become a Patreon supporter, you can still be eligible for that Manager of the Month award. We'll also do the Weekend Review newsletter, all kinds of other stuff. So it's patreon.com/alwayscheating. Brandon, do you want to run through a quick thank you to all of our new patrons?
Yeah, and before I do, just to underline what you just said, Josh, you'll hear the occasional ad on the Always Cheating podcast, but your Patreon support is genuinely the lifeblood of what gets Josh and I on these microphones every week. And it becomes all about that community that we're creating. And just to be a part of the conversation that our supporters are having on our Slack was so much fun this weekend. So a big thanks to all of you, and a special thanks to new patrons at the producer level, Jazz Binning and Francis Moore. At the Volkswagen level, thanks to Simon, Oystein, Christopher Messel, Patrick Russell, Craig Kelliam, Magic Snigaki. Okay, that was a tough name. At the Lord Sorlot tier, this is bursting with supporters, Joshua. Thanks to Ellen Tapper, Merritt Hedgelin, Ben James, Jacob McIntosh, Chris Brown, Jonas Segergren, The Tyne, Ivan Grottel Nielsen, Tor Forland, Nim McKinney, Marshall Brancy, James Parham, Roth, okay. I feel like Tim Heidecker right now, Josh. Justin Leatherwood, Timu Puki. Oh my God, we finally got a Premier League player to support the podcast.
That's right.
Matthias Jensen, Anders Rudd, Kami, Rodri Lloyd, Cameron Archer, Jack Burchett III. See if you can get your dad to join while you're at it, Jack. Jozo Frankovic, Harry Cotter, Jose De La Roja, Michael Johansson, Daniel Brennan, Chris Heiger, Johan Espong, Brett McDowell, and Chris O'Connor. Thank you so much to our new supporters.
All right, Brandon, let's take a quick break. We'll get back and talk about overperformers, underperformers, and head scratchers going into game week 2. All right, Brandon, we're back. Today's theme, overperformers, underperformers, and head scratchers. We got some big picture questions. We got some small picture questions. We've got some individual players that we want to discuss. Let's kick things off, though, with Eric Freeman, who says, what questions did you have going into game week 1 that you felt were answered or that remain unanswered?
Yeah, this is an impossible question for me to answer. I'm trying to think of the right thing to say. But then I look at all 10 fixtures that were played in game week 1, and it's like each fixture and all 20 teams, it's almost like they presented something that I didn't expect and expected. Like Everton for one half, crummy as expected, and then suddenly through Decore, they were magical. And then I think if I were to settle on one thing, my question going into game week 1 was, just how bad are the 3 promoted teams going to be this season? And my opinion for at least this game week is totally upended, because yeah. Watford looked brilliant. I mean, I think Villa were asleep. However, Watford still looked brilliant. Brentford, similar situation with Arsenal, to like, Jesus, how low can they go? But Brentford looked amazing. And even though Norwich, they could only hang on for a good like 30 minutes, they didn't look like the worst team that's ever been in the top flight. So the answer to that question is, you know what? All of these promoted teams will have something to offer this season. And that's kind of exciting. You had tweeted this on the Hail Cheaters Twitter, Josh, about the relegation battle, just based on evidence from this week, is going to be kind of sensational this season if everybody's able to keep up this level of play.
I thought that Norwich, even though they lost, and they had the toughest match, certainly, of anybody, a Liverpool team that had very few players away for international duty, who basically have a title that they want to win back. It was just a tough, it was always going to be a tough match for them. But I think they really pass well. I think it was, we did this when we talked about Norwich in our preview pod, and I think they had far and away the most completed passes of any team in the championship last year. And you could really see it in that match. I thought that they really felt like a cohesive team. They certainly could have scored a goal late in that match. Right near the end there, it was that kind of crazy. Allison made like 5 saves in 3 right. seconds. It was kind of ridiculous.
Yes.
And so I think that Norwich, even though I still feel pretty confident in our prediction, they're going to finish 20th, I'm sorry to say. I do think that there are going to be some matches where they really surprise some teams and win some games they shouldn't. And so that is exciting. As you said, Brentford and Watford, I mean, I at this point, I would be surprised if Watford went down. They just, you know, they have got a lot of quality across the board. And Brentford, we'll see. I mean, that was kind of an unusual match in some ways because it was this kickoff, first match in their home stadium in the first division in 74 years. A lot of things going in their favor in that match. But I thought Tony, who didn't get any attacking returns, still looked fantastic and really, you know, should have had a couple of assists in that match.
Yeah, I'm undecided on that performance from Tony. I think he was all deep lying playmaker Kane and no just exists at all in the 18 yard box Kane.
True.
And I agree with you, Josh, insofar as sure, like Tony looks equipped to play in the Premier League. Does he look equipped to be a fantasy asset? I mean, we'll have to talk about Emmanuel Dennis. We'll have something to say about that.
Yeah, we'll talk about him in just a minute. As far as the unanswered questions, I think it's hard to know what questions, whether you have a real answer to the questions or not. I was worried that Man City would look unsettled. In some ways, that question was answered. They looked unsettled in the Charity Shield, and I had some concerns about that. And I was like, well, they're Man City. They'll be fine. They'll figure it out by the time Sunday rolled around. And you still really felt it in that match. I felt like I was just amazed how often Spurs were able to get them on the counterattack. It was shocking. And I think if I had a question, it was about, I was curious how Grealish was going to fit. And I did feel like Grealish and Sterling together didn't quite seem to work for me. It felt like they were both kind of overloading the left. And I suppose if you had Kevin De Bruyne, I was talking to some people on social media about this, but you know, it felt like it opened up some space, but no one was really taking advantage of that space. There was Mahrez was kind of having one of those bad Mahrez days, and yeah, so
God, Jesus, so bad. Yeah. Just like Pep is it's slipping through his fingers. Gary Neville made the point of it's. Which we could have all figured out, but it's 3-1-0 losses in a row for City. If you go back to the Champions League final, to the Community Shield, to against Spurs, no goals, all 1-0 losses. And then Grealish, yeah, I was less concerned about the overloading. I think that's kind of like the style that Pep wants to play. It's more that Grealish looked like he thought he was still playing with Aston Villa, meaning he was treating Raheem Sterling like he was Matt Target. And I think we are still waiting. We will have to wait a little while longer to see Jack Grealish fully level up. So from that point of view, though, I'm actually kind of encouraged to see Grealish's performance and playing the full 90 against Spurs, because if he does step it up, and if City also, if all the players around him step it up, then, yeah, I am going to buy into the Grealish is like a bargain price at $8 million. So generally positive read on Grealish's performance against Spurs.
I'm a little on the fence still. I just don't know how it's all. It feels like there's going to be a lot of moving players in and out to figure out the best combination. And so I do wonder a little bit if I'm just kind of out on Man City fantasy-wise. And I moving Gundogan out for nobody for Man City honestly seems okay, acceptable to me, even though they have two home matches in a row. I just don't know who I would have. Ferran Torres didn't impress. Grealish didn't impress enough for me to really try to move heaven and earth to bring him in. KDB came back, but he is one of the most expensive players in the game, unfortunately. And with Bruno and Salah in such good form, I don't know how I would bring him in. I'd have to sacrifice. I'd have to wild card basically to make it happen.
Yeah.
And that's not happening.
I think that if you're going to target one player for game week two on Manchester City, it feels like it has to be John Stones, because why in God's name is Pep persisting with Nathan Ake? Like, it's just, I don't understand. And John Stones is there at 5.5. I think a lot of us could squeeze him in, and I'd be shocked if Stones doesn't get his starting position back going into game week two. And it's a nice fixture. And if you're Ruben Diaz and Ederson, you are probably hammering everyone in the defensive outfit there. Like, we haven't had a clean sheet in too long. We are going to make it happen against the Canaries.
I think there are a couple other questions I don't want to get too much into the player talk here, because we have kind of a player section coming up in a second here, but just talking about teams just broadly. I thought that Everton, I was a little worried about, but it's hard to know how much to read of that match because, first of all, Adam, he's not in a running order. So just a quick shout out to, Adam Armstrong, who joined a little bit under the radar for Southampton this week, came in as a 6 million forward, started the first match for Southampton. This is a guy who finished second in the Premier League in goal scoring last year, right in between Timu Pukki and Tony. So, and he's a little guy too, Bernard. You know, I love a little guy.
You do, yeah.
Available for just 6 million in the game. Doesn't have a great game week two. They play Man United, but after that, not a bad run. 3 out of 4, pretty good. Newcastle, West Ham, way to Man City, home to Wolves. So 3 out of 4 is four of those, I think, are pretty good fixtures for a Southampton striker. He may end up being a really nice Tony out move if Tony just doesn't impress in game week two. And I think Tony, I got a little choked up there, Brendan. I was really, you know,
you love your Tony. You love Tony.
I think that Tony certainly needs the Crystal Palace game. But let's see how he looks after that. Crystal Palace looked how I thought they would look, which is kind of terrifying. I am a little worried now that we didn't have them in the relegation spot in our team predictions. Let's see if they start to figure it out a little bit. But I mean, that Brentford Palace match is suddenly extremely interesting just from a kind of what do we have with these two squad teams. Brendan, that brings us to the next question, which is from Ben Gauthier, who says, how quick to judgment should we be on the uncertain spots in our squad? For most people, that would be the mid-priced midfielders. We saw Benrahma and Sarr especially both look very good. Yeah, between those two, okay, I know that Benrahma got more attacking returns, but between those two, I would say it's like neck and neck over who looked better this weekend.
Yeah, the advantage of Benrahma is he plays on the better squad. But I guess the downside is he plays in a better squad that has a Thursday night European commitment. Right. Sarr looked bigger, badder, meaner than he did last time Watford were in the Premier League. And he was torching Matt Target there in the Villa defense. And it was so kind of in the spirit of this episode and Ben's question of how quick we should rush to judgment is how much of that Watford Villa game was Watford just in the zone at their home stadium and Villa just having a bad day at the office. I could believe that, that read on that match, like how much was Villa flattering Watford, but yeah, on the whole, Sarr looked awesome.
I mean, you had Target, Cash, Mings and Konsa back there, you know, and Emi Martinez.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can say the names and I agree they're all good players, but, any particular day, they're just not at it. And, you know, as good as they are, these are not elite. You know, this is not City. This is not Real Madrid. It's Birmingham, Josh.
Well, yeah, I mean, any given Saturday and all those cliche, we can reference Chinatown and other movies all we want. But, I think, I mean, for Matt Target to get so slaughtered by Sarr in the match that they actually had to pull him at halftime. I it's a bad day at the office for sure. But I certainly come out of that thinking that Watford looked very good. I mean, the issues I would have with Aston Villa would be at the attack.
Yeah.
And they didn't seem very cohesive. Although I thought it got a little bit better. Certainly once Leon Bailey entered, he only played the final 30 minutes. I thought that things really kicked up from there. Of course, he had the assist to McGinn late, and he seems like a real player and someone that you could absolutely consider. Yeah. He's only 6.5 million.
And Buendia didn't really exert himself on the match, and I think that we'll see more from him this season. Okay, so let me pointedly ask you, Josh. After game week one, you've got Gundogan to move, possibly. Would you go for how high in your list is Lamine Sarr and your replacement threat?
Well, I mean, I think Sarr and Benrahma are both there. I mean, Sarr, it's an interesting question. In some ways, I feel like Sarr is actually the safer pick, because I think that he is the most important player in Watford's entire squad. And so it feels like he's sort of unmovable. I think he'll play 90 minutes practically every match. They've got a pretty good run ahead. I suppose they have a more difficult game week two, I would say. They play away to Brighton, whereas Benrahma plays home to Leicester, which I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe that's about equal, honestly. Although Leicester still have some things that are changing in the back. Isn't that kind of crazy the way they just made that center back signing? And he's a good player too. That feels like a pretty, bringing in Vestergaard like almost immediately seems like a great signing, great bit of business.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I think it's fine. I mean, I think it's amazing that Leicester are keeping clean sheets with such a patched up defense back there. Just looking at the Community Shield too. So just credit to them.
Yeah. So I think that I'm leaning towards Benrahma, and I have to, this is like one of those like mental block things for me where he feels like such a bandwagon popular pick now, even though he logically should be. And yeah. I mean, Brandon, the man is number five for threat in the ICT index. Yeah. I love my ICT index.
Yeah.
He is 50th out of 233 in creativity, Brandon. I mean, that's top 20% right there.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
I guess the wild card with Benrahma is, does Lingard end up moving back to West Ham in the next couple of weeks? And does that suck up any of the Benrahma oxygen? Now I think Bowen and Fernals, easy, drop one of those two to the bench. And I think Benrahma has been groomed by Moyes since last season and through the preseason for this to be a breakout year for him. And he's been likened to, when Mahrez and Vardy at the budget prices during the Leicester title winning season, like is Benrahma going to give us that kind of value? I mean, it's probably going to look more like a Lingard value proposition like we got at the second half of last season, which is not so bad. But yeah, I think the value with Benrahma might edge out Sarr just a little bit.
I think I think they're both great value. I think that they're both excellent picks. I am leaning towards it right now. And to be quite honest, I really am leaning towards Benrahma. I just like their next two fixtures so much more. They're next three, really, because they play Leicester at home, Palace at home, Southampton away. And from there, we can reevaluate and see where things stand. But the appeal of that is that would free up 1.5 million in my squad. And so that means if I feel like it's time to move on from Tony, which after the Palace match, they played Villa away. I mean, their fixtures get a little bit worse after the Palace match. And so it'd be easy to go from Tony. If I have that one extra 1.5 million from downgrading Gundogan to Benrahma, I could upgrade Tony to an 8 million player. So I could bring in Bamford. I could bring in Dominic Calvert-Lewin. I could bring in one of the 7.5s. Lots of possibilities there. And so if it looks like Benrahma is going to rise in price this week, I'll probably just make the move early, honestly.
Yeah.
Just to make sure I'm not caught short there. If it comes out that Gundogan's injured, then I'm just going to go ahead and do that. I hadn't thought about Europe, and that is annoying. But I wonder if he usually early on in Europe they don't tend to play all of the starters.
It's Yarmolenko season in Europe this year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, maybe he makes the bench and comes on for 20 minutes or something like that. But one of the things that I have resolved to do this year is to be a little more aggressive about making early transfers and just not worrying too much about injuries, because I didn't play the value, the price rise game enough last year. And I feel like it kind of caught me a little bit at the end. And I was a little short on some players that I just didn't get on early enough. So, I feel good about either one, to be quite honest. And so I think moving early, it sort of just depends on who you're talking about. I mean, Gundogan is an easy pick. If you had Mahrez, I think you just have to hold. If you have Grealish, you have to hold. I mean, at least those are attacking players. And so even if Mahrez only came in and played 30 minutes or Grealish in game week two, they could still do something at home to Norwich in 30 minutes quite easily. I mean, look at what Firmino did against Norwich when he came out at the 60th minute. There's plenty of time to get attacking returns if you come on late.
Yeah, that's my feeling about Jota. Is I do have a concern about does Firmino get the start in game week two? But if Klopp is going to play that, yeah, plenty of time for your mid-priced attacking asset to make something of 30 minutes. So that's going to be Jota's saving grace, hopefully.
All right, next question comes from Ketifer. He says, what are your most and least pleasant surprises from game week one. This is going to turn into the Benrahma cast.
Yeah, certainly, you know, your mid-price sort of your punt, your I like this player pick when they go off for a goal and assist and some bonus, that's going to feel good. I mean, you mentioned the Danny Ings miracle, meaningless penalty. If we really were to pick the bones of my game week one team, the Ings 7-pointer that actually, like, on 106 points, I guess if you just take those 5 points away, I'm still breaking 100, but that probably is the biggest miracle of this.
I stood up. I couldn't sit during that penalty. Were you able to sit in your chair when you took that penalty, or did you stand up as well?
Yeah, I was probably like laying on my sectional. I tend to like my back is never like fully upright, so.
Okay. I had to like hide behind a couch. I was really nervous during that because it felt like such a pivotal moment, right?
Yeah.
If he misses that pen, then if you're like, oh, like this is what the fantasy experience is like.
Yeah.
Then he scores the pen. And you're like, yes, this is what the fantasy experience is like. You know. So either way, it felt true to the fantasy experience.
Just one other surprise I have to mention, Josh, and that's Nuno at Spurs. Like, I don't think anyone had any real idea of how Nuno was going to fit with Spurs and how this is going to look like right out of the gate. But Nuno looks like he looks really healthy. He looked kind of trim. He also looks like he's properly dressed. Like at Wolves, he was just always wearing like workout gear, yeah, big parkas and whatnot. So he looked good. He felt good. He managed the team really well. So Nuno and Spurs probably up there among the pleasant surprises.
Yeah, which goes right into the next question, which is from that Joe guy. He says, any interest in Spurs or Chelsea assets? Are we still waiting and seeing given the fixtures, new manager, transfer dealings, etc.? I mean, I would love to bring in Son. I mean, this is sort of the question that I tried to resolve this week and ultimately couldn't. I feel okay about it because I would have had to give up Mason Greenwood to bring in Son, and ultimately Greenwood picked up 8 points. But yeah, I mean, putting Son aside for a second, anybody else on Spurs that sort of piqued your interest today?
I mean, I guess Tanganga had the man of the match performance, but have I considered Spurs defense? It doesn't feel right with Eric Dier starting as a center back. That ultimately will blow up. I suspect at least by fine fantasy margins. I think, you know, as mentioned, I'm sure Nuno's got it under control. And I was that while I thought that was a decent, as you said, Josh, physical performance from Spurs, and they played City as well as they could have, it wasn't one of those team performances where suddenly you're trying to figure out how to get the piece of the FPL pie. No, to answer your question.
I think, I mean, kind of a no for me too, to be totally honest, but I think that I suppose that in some ways it's just because they played Man City in game week one and it was just hard to see past that. But in hindsight, I'm not really sure we weren't considering some of their defenders as 4.5 million players. I mean, their defense is incredibly cheap this year. Tanganga's 4.5 million, Davis and Sanchez, who looks like he might be a starter now, is 4.5 million. Reguilón's only 5 million, not that much more. Eric Dier, we already talked about, is only 4.52. They brought in,
Romero?
Romero, right? He got just a couple of minutes. He got 1 minute at the end there. So
yeah.
Does Romero ultimately replace Dier? Most likely. Give it a week to see.
Yeah, apparently he was nursing a bit of an injury. I don't recall what the injury was, but I think that is probably a sign of things to come. And Eric Dier seems like he'd be the first one to make way.
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to keep it positive in this week's pod, but neither of us are. And I mean, Eric Dier seems like an awesome dude. Like, if I could hang out, get a beer with almost anyone in the Premier League, he would be at the top of the list for sure. But fantasy-wise, he's been pretty disappointing over the years. And so that's where we're coming at this from a slightly negative perspective. As far as Chelsea goes, I don't know what to say. It's like we sort of – this is a real fantasy question that in some ways I think is just sort of always – a question that's kind of tricky to answer, which is, do you play the game week in front of you, or do you play the next four game weeks? Because if you were just playing game week one, right, and you were going to deal with the problems after game week one that may arise, you would have had like at least two players from Chelsea in your game week one squad.
Yeah.
You kind of knew that they were going to slaughter, you know, Crystal Palace at home.
Yeah.
Maybe we didn't know exactly who was going to play, but we could make some inferences. It would have been unlikely for Rudiger and Azpilicueta, for example, not to play. It felt very likely that Pulisic was going to play. Mason Mount was very likely too, especially because he didn't start the Super Cup. Timo Werner, if that's your speed, yeah, it shouldn't be, but maybe
sure.
It is.
Go out there, have fun with it. You
have
freak.
Fun with it. Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like Pulisic was the one, and the only reason I didn't bring him in ultimately was because he was 0.5 million too expensive, and I would have had to go with two 4 million defenders in the bench, which I didn't want to do, even though in hindsight I could have, because Joel Veltman now has like a COVID close contact or something and might be out for a while. So yeah, so it's kind of, and then Brownhill didn't start either. My bench is like dead. There's like no
one.
Bamadeli has some sort of, do you have like appendicitis or something like that? He had some kind of issue that's going to keep him out for
his tummy hurt.
Was that? Yeah, he had some kind of illness. I don't know, whatever it was. I mean, I'm just like, why did I say appendicitis? He had some sort of problem. It didn't seem like long term, but it wasn't totally clear if he was even going to start anyway. So now we're in a position where, yeah, we might be looking for some cheap defenders. But back to Chelsea for a second. Did we learn anything that we didn't know already? I mean, they're going to be really good this year.
They looked awesome.
Yeah,
and they will continue to be awesome. They will be awesome on many different fronts, from domestic cup competitions to Europe to the Premier League. I don't think we can answer this question until Lukaku is in the starting 11.
Yeah.
And that is going to okay. So Lukaku gets into the starting 11. We see him play in the league, and a few different things could happen. The most likely outcome is, wow, Chelsea are awesome and Lukaku looks great. We have to figure out how to get Lukaku.
Yep.
Or then it becomes a week-to-week debate of whether we're getting Havertz, Pulisic, or Werner to just sort of like collect the residual points more affordably.
I don't know what happens to Werner when Lukaku joins. It's not clear to me that he... In some ways, you could just keep playing him in the left. Does it matter if he never scores? Is that a problem, or is it fine? They won the Champions League, and it was fine. So I don't really know. And again, I'm very high in this Chelsea team.
I think you could. Yeah, you could set it up where Lukaku's the number nine, and then you play Havertz, Werner, and Pulisic as three behind him. I could see that working.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So I mean, we're certainly going to see a lot of rotation. I mean, Ziyech is out. I don't know how long he's out for, maybe just a couple of weeks longer still. The fantasy side is expected back August 28th. So we'll see. I mean, most likely if that's when he's expected to come back, then they'll probably just wait until after international break to be safe. So when he comes back, that does create some problems, most likely for Pulisic, I would think. I mean, just because he was the one who came on when Ziyech got injured in the Super Cup. So I think it's going to be tricky. And then Lukaku, I mean, just coming in at 11.5, it's a killer price. You know, because you're like, okay, maybe in my head I was thinking, well, yeah, it's tricky. It's hard to have Lukaku, but I'm not sure I'm that high in Fernandez anyway. Yeah, maybe I can get the same thing. Maybe I can get the same thing from Jadon Sancho, or maybe just Mason Greenwood that I can get from Bruno Fernandez. And then, which is not to say that I don't love Bruno. I mean, he's an amazing player, but I was like, well, maybe I can just get away with that, not having him. And after today, his ownership's going to go from, what, 50% to 90%? Like,
God,
every player.
Yeah,
you're just going to start with him next year, right? He's going to be like a player that's... You're going to pick 14 players outside of Brooklyn.
It's going to be like that U2 album that comes pre-downloaded on everyone's iPhone.
Exactly. So that's the second time that's come up in a week in conversation.
Yeah. U2 is everywhere.
So, yeah, lots more to come on Chelsea. I still don't quite know who I want, though, on that team. So, as you said, let's wait till Lukaku joins, and then we'll evaluate. I think... I mean, they play away to Arsenal game week two. It's hard to, at this point, I mean, this would be a fun match. You and I are going to watch that in person somewhere TBD in Brooklyn or Manhattan. So we'll keep it posted for all of our Brooklyn and Manhattan listeners, but we're definitely going to get together and watch that match. You're coming down from your upstate abode.
Mm-hmm.
Ahead of, by the way, a permanent return to Brooklyn, which I'm excited about. That'll
be
in September. So yeah, I think, I completely lost my train of thought. Oh, right. So Chelsea play away to Arsenal in game week two. And given what we saw from both squads this weekend, it'd be kind of hard to imagine Chelsea not keeping a clean sheet in that match. They do play Liverpool away after that. Maybe a little harder to see him keep a clean sheet in that one. So I'm not rushing to bring in a Chelsea defender. And I guess Mason Mount would be the one player. I mean, I could go like for like and just bring in Mount for Gundogan. Yeah, but it does feel like I can maybe get the same thing from Benrahma or Sarr for 1.5 million cheaper that I can get from Mason Mount. And so I'm more inclined to go that way.
Yeah, I'm with you. Mount is a great player. And I think like he probably doesn't get as much FPL credit as he deserves. But the reason is, as you're saying, there's always going to be a cheaper midfielder that can get at least close, if not surpass Mount's returns.
All right, three players. Quick yes or no answers on all three of these. Jeff FPL says, is this one of those stretches where Pogba's motivated and plays to his full potential? Does that make him a buy, even if you have two Man United midfielders already?
Oh, God. Pogba, what what a performance. I mean, so what we know immediately about Pogba is that he was amazing this week. We also know that he has been amazing other weeks and turns up the very next week and is kind of not amazing. It's all up to Pogba, Josh.
Yeah, he's not going to play as a left wing for much longer. In fact, that may have been the one week that he did it. I mean, he had four assists. What's funny is I thought he played really poorly the first 25 minutes of that match or so. I thought he missed some chances, and Mason Greenwood played him in once, and it felt like he was fouling a lot, and I was like, okay, like this is not working. You like don't play Pogba as an attacking winger. And then, of course, he responds and has four assists. He looked fantastic the final 65 minutes. But I wouldn't seriously consider him. I think he could move right back into central midfield from here. So I think he's just in a void, a full-on void.
Right, yeah. Sancho comes into the starting 11 and things start to, I mean, I guess he slots right into where Daniel James started this weekend. So that doesn't necessarily mean Pogba has to move, but I don't think it really requires over analysis. Pogba is great. Yep. You know, listen, if you want to have fun, go get him. It feels risky.
Yeah. I would just say, don't do it. I'll go farther than you will, I guess. Uppercut Panda says, is there a better Lukaku enabler than Dennis the Menace at Watford? And that's Emmanuel Dennis, 5 million player, one goal, one assist, three bonus points. Quite a start.
I can't see any. I mean, the only other way to enable that kind of Lukaku move is to get rid of Bruno or Salah, assuming you have both of them. And that doesn't feel right. So, you know, I think the way a lot of us had set up going into game week one is, you know, you feel like you're being budget up front, but being budget up front seems like it typically means you're spending around 22 to 25 million up there. So you're still spending a fair amount of money as it is. And so I agree with Uppercut here that so long as Dennis continues to start, no, there's no reason why he wouldn't. That's the way to do it. Downgrade to a cheap starter. And like we talk a lot about avoid the cheap, usually a 4.5 promise of a striker in the making, and that always blows up your team. So maybe I am chasing Dennis's points from this previous week, but I don't know. I trust my eyes. Like Watford, that worked. This is not a Rian Brewster situation where there's no plan and there was no way to integrate Brewster into that Sheffield United squad. So that Dennis feels much safer and better to me.
It just goes to show, though, how hard it is to bring Lukaku in. I mean, as we were talking, I was trying to figure out how I could do that, right? So if I went Gundogan to Benrahma, if I went Tony to Dennis, that would free up 3 million. And so I could move Ings to Lukaku, I would still be 0.5 million short. And that would be basically gutting two spots. I have two 4 million defenders on the bench. I mean, it is not going to be easy to fit in Lukaku and have Fernandez and Salah. And so it's going to be like a real short-term move for me if I bring in Lukaku. I do not see myself having all three of those all season.
It could be a situation where, listen, we did a whole preseason episode about forwards, and the theme was, look, we have lots of great forwards to choose from. Yep. So keep your fingers crossed that Ings and Calvert-Lewin and Antonio and Bamford all step it up, and they continue to bring us returns that can match whatever Lukaku and Kane are going to do, so we don't have to actually deal with this situation.
Yeah, exactly. That would be the dream. Yeah, do so well that I don't have to think about Big Rom. That would really ease some of my stress here. Final question is from FPL Pinkman. It says, get off Ben White or any other Arsenal defenders already.
Josh, I feel like Arsenal fans are often really quick to complain and they're entitled. But after that performance against Brentford, I finally felt that Arsenal fans had many legitimate reasons to really complain. Like that lineup was an embarrassment. The way they played was embarrassing. And Arteta, you know, we've tried to be pro Arteta on this podcast, and maybe he's just like found himself in the wrong place at the wrong time, but yeah. Arsenal, that ain't it. And if you have Ben White, he's probably not a priority because he's easy to bench, but when it comes time to wild card Pinkman, Ben White would be one of the first people I'd get rid of.
I will say that I thought Emile Smith Rowe looked terrific and had some really nice moments and looks like he could be a real player. Only 5.5 million. I think that he's one that you can sort of keep on your personal watch list, especially when Arsenal's fixtures get better in a couple of weeks. I mean, he just doesn't cost that much. So you could even bench him in bad weeks and get away with it. And I thought Saka looked pretty good when he came on late to sort of get lost control of the ball late, tried to pretend it was a penalty. I'm feeling pretty a little bummed out about Arsenal, but I don't want to end on a bummed out note. So I'm going to say, Brandon, I was overall really impressed by the quality of the matches, the quality of the promoted teams, even just moving fantasy out of the window for a second and just talking purely about the experience of watching Premier League this weekend. It was what I didn't realize how much we sacrificed last year until today. You know, the matches on all at the same time, the fans in the stands, the players just seeming more up for it. The fans bringing a team like Spurs, who are going through a really tough time right now, to another level. Yeah. And just watching all of that happen, it was just so thrilling. And it felt so good to have everybody back and to have it seem like it's really going to be a fun, exciting season. I mean, even things like Spurs role in the league, or Man City role in the league, it's like they've already lost one match, right? We're not talking about the Invincibles here. And so I think I'm hoping that we see a really open season this year. And it is exciting.
All the kits looked pretty amazing, I have to say, too. Strong kit season.
Good. Yeah. Even Arsenal's kit. Maybe it's the best thing we can say about them this week. Kit looks pretty good.
Yeah. I heard that they were wearing the wrong socks, but I was like, this is working. Red socks with this blue kit. It's great.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to do our lightning round.
All right, friends. A quick note for Fantasy Football Hub, which is a sensational one-stop shop for a lot of your FPL needs. What you're going to want to do is visit fantasyfootballhub.co.uk/always. And there, as a listener of this podcast, you can get 25% off the membership tier of your choice. What you can do at the Hub, you can access the greatest fantasy minds managing in FPL today. You've got managers sharing their team strategies. Through thoughtful articles, Josh, you're an article reader. I happen to be a video watcher, and contributors to the Hub are creating video content there as well. And if you're less interested in what other managers are doing and you want to forge your own path, go to the Hub to access all the data. The Hub has real Opta stats, and they filter them through incredible, easy-to-use tools like their player comparison tool. They've got a sensational fixture ticker, other game week planning stuff like custom spreadsheets from the mastermind, Ben Krellen. Also chat directly with managers just like you. You know what I say, Josh, right?
Mm-hmm.
I say never manage alone. Don't do it. You can't manage alone. You have to chat with other managers just to keep your sanity. And that's can do that through the Hub.
Makes fantasy fun again.
It does make it more fun. So Hub has private WhatsApp groups and other ways to keep in touch with people who are sharing your hobby. Also, something I did this weekend during game week one is I used the new Fantasy Football Hub app. So you can go to the iOS or Android store and download that hub. So again, that's fantasyfootballhub.co.uk/always, where you can get 25% off your membership tier of choice.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We're back. Game week two. Let's continue to make fantasy fun again next weekend, Brandon. I am excited. A nice mix. No Friday. This is a real traditional one this time around, Brandon.
Yeah.
Six matches on Saturday, three on Sunday, and then a little dessert on Monday with the West Ham Leicester fixture, which I think could actually be a really fun and exciting fixture. I may have
it's one hell of a digestif there, Joshua.
It truly is. So we have three questions here in our lightning round, okay? And the first question is, for me, Josh Landon, I put this question to myself.
Yeah.
Do we have a proper game week two captaincy debate now?
I think we definitely do. First of all, there was no debate going into game week one. I mean, a couple of incredibly smart managers chose to captain Bruno over Salah, and I tip my hat to you. But the consensus was, without any debate, Mo Salah. Going into game week two, now, based on game week one performance, obviously we need to talk a little bit more about this. The extra layer, right, is the classic. And for those sort of new to FPL lore and sort of standard practice for addicts such as me and Josh, you tend to not like to captain in the first match of the game week, the very first kickoff. So Liverpool-Burnley, it's enticing for Salah because they're home, but being the early and first kickoff of the game week, if things go tits up with this captaincy pick on Salah, it's going to sour the rest of the game week experience. And then you got Manchester United playing on Sunday, slightly more appealing. So I guess those are the two sides of the debate.
The home real versus away. You know, that's another one, right? Salah's at home, Bruno's away. You know, we saw the home teams play pretty well this weekend, so that could be a factor too.
Yeah, for sure. Thinking more tactically here and less about the home and away fixtures is, what do we know about Hasenhüttl and Southampton? Is he does like to favor the high line. And I thought Manchester United looked pretty terrific on the counterattack. And especially if you get Sancho his first start against Southampton, Bruno, Greenwood, and Sancho, and maybe Pogba, deeper lying, releasing them with incredible raking passes. This United squad could just absolutely tear Southampton to pieces, whereas Burnley... Yeah. are better at playing the low block, and Liverpool can be stymied sometimes by teams that play in that style. I mean, I think Liverpool killed Burnley last season only when Peacock Farrell was in goal. We've got a healthy Nick Pope here, Josh.
That's true. Although conceding two at home to Brighton, that's a tough start for Burnley. I think they really could be in some trouble this year. I will say on my squad right now, I have Bruno as my captain over Salah. And I think it's a real debate. And I think there is, it's a hard one to split. It's a hard one to come down and definitively say, yes, I have crunched every number and I am certain that Salah is the better pick of a Bruno. I think it's extremely close this weekend. And with Southampton, I mean, part of it to me is that it's just this kind of unsettled back line now with Vestergaard having left. I just worry a little bit about, I mean, all the things you just noted about Man United and their attack. I mean, we haven't talked about Greenwood very much, by the way. Maybe it's just because I have my team and you don't have him. I don't know. There's like a logical, I guess you could move Jota to Greenwood if you really wanted to, but I mean, did you have any thoughts on Greenwood's performance yesterday?
I thought it was great. I thought he looked really dialed in. I thought it was interesting how him and Bruno kind of were rotating positions on the pitch that they occupied. Sometimes you'd see Bruno sort of in the number nine and Greenwood out wide and vice versa. But for them doing that, I thought Greenwood had a higher level of communication with his teammates than I've seen in the past. So, and he looked hungry to throw a cliche out there. So
sure.
Yeah, there is definitely a temptation to move a player like Jota, who is maybe a 65% best odds of starting this week, to a player like Greenwood. Now Ole's got a ton of options to play with United, and he chose to give Greenwood the full 90 minutes. But if you look at the preseason, Greenwood was getting a lot of 90 minute matches. And I think he's no longer the young buck where his minutes need to be managed as carefully as they once were. So I'd be much more confident in Greenwood starting and getting some points this week than Jota, even though Jota's still a perfectly great pick.
Yeah, had an excellent first match for sure. I thought he looked great too, and it just kind of how I felt going into the season, even more validated yesterday, which is that he's just too good not to start. Maybe he gets moved around into different positions and he doesn't always play out of position as a forward. And certainly when Cavani's back, although Cavani is not an every week starter, at least he wasn't last season. I don't know why he would be now that he's even older. And so Greenwood, I just think will keep getting moved around, and a player of his talent. I mean, just that, like you said, I mean, his finish on that second goal was, it turned the game around. It really did. I mean, Leicester, Leeds scored that goal and you were like, could this be like last season, where Leeds played this 4-3 match against Liverpool, it was just completely wide open. But no, once Greenwood scored that goal, then you're like, let's just go ahead and take this game over. Complete momentum changer. So I just think he's got that kind of ability. And I thought he could have had a couple of assists in that match as well. So I feel really good about Greenwood. If you're looking for someone, maybe people are already starting to wild card a little bit, but I think that he's a great option for any team. I just don't see him losing that spot anytime soon. Maybe he doesn't play 90 every week, but who does outside of, players like Mo Salah.
All right, let me take the second question here, Josh, and it comes from Blue Nose Stew, who asks, it looks like there's been a lot of big scores this weekend, and I've got what will probably be the best score of the season already. As someone who usually has a terrible start, should we do things differently if we've had a good game week one for a change? Now, Josh, pretty good start for both of us in game week one. We can talk a little bit about what this means for both of us. For you, does having a really great game week one suddenly change how you're going to approach game week two, or is it just sort of like proceed as normal?
Well, you can look back at some of the people who've won FPL, who finished number one overall, and some of them have this number one season wrapped around seasons where they finished 300K, 500K, 800K, way off the mark. And I think that there's a certain kind of person, and I put myself in this category too, where I really do play better when I'm already playing well. So, I mean, in some ways that's an obvious thing to say, but let's say I luck into a good start or things sort of click or something goes right, or I make a good decision, whatever, that does tend to feed more good decisions for me. It's like the Tiger Woods thing where I just feel like I'm a little bit of a front runner. And I manage my best when I'm already doing well. And so I think that, I think it's because I trust myself more. I mean, you've talked before about how you felt like you outsourced a lot of your thinking last year because you had kind of a rough start and how you don't want to do that this year. And so, I mean, you're kind of in the same position as Blue Nose Stew now. So I feel like that's, I mean, it sounds like, again, I feel like we're like doing like lots of like sports cliches in this week's, I'm not really sure why, but it's like this idea that like, because you're doing well, it makes it easier for you to play your game, I think.
Totally. And operationally, if you're doing well, if you had a good game week one, you already have lots of good players. The problem is for managers who are off to a bad start is now their focus is on getting new players in and getting what we might now perceive as the right players in. So they have a lot of operational things that they have to get through, and having a good game week one, you're sort of freeing up, whether it's freeing up brain space to strategize for upcoming game weeks or just kind of watching the extra dollars pile into your team value. It also allows you to, you're already covered with the good players, so it allows you to start looking for more diamonds in the rough. And I think that is like where you might look to kick on after really great game weeks. A good game week one, I've got all the players I need. All right, maybe going into game week two, there's a little marginal player that I can bring in my defense or my fourth midfielder that has a great fixture. But it kind of feels good with having that good game week under your belt that you don't have to do any major surgery to your team as it is.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, just on a practical level, if you had a good game week or you had a good start, you're probably not replacing the most expensive players in your team, right? If you don't have Salah right now, or you don't have Bruno, a lot of your brain space is probably filled up with trying to figure out how to get them into your squad. And I would advise you to do so. I honestly would. I know it's not the most fun answer and you kind of want to go without them, but I think you just have to take your lump after game week one and just accept that you probably need to have both them, at least for the moment, given the form that they're in.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think you're right. So you could tinker at the margins, and I think that does make it a little bit easier. And so I think just having confidence in yourself is a big part of it. And, Brendan, I like that answer so much that I'm going to scrap the third lightning round question. I'm just going to end the pod right there because it's a good upbeat note. Trust yourself.
Yeah.
Trust how you've done if you're off to a good start. Good luck to you. Make fantasy fun again this weekend. Thank you for listening. Brendan, if people want to support the pod, they can go to patreon.com/alwayscheating to do so. I will read off our producer thank yous today. These are all the wonderful producers of the Always Cheating podcast. Thank you so much to Mike DiPietro, second mention on this week's pod, Brendan. Andy Penn, Martin Savage, Brian T, DeBig Gaffer, Babas Kuhn, Jeff Husby, Ben Grant, James Holland, Dave Wagner-Lodahl, Nick Wright, Jim Payne. Jim Payne, great to see you on the Zoom chat that we did with Patreon supporters on Tuesday. Brian Chin, Blair Jacobson, Travis West, Victor Forbrooks Gogang, Paul Herzig, Andy Portlock. Andy, special thank you to you. You know why. Trevor Ingerson, Toothless Gibbon, Lindsay Rostel, Anton Markov at FPL Merch. Go check out his new site. Looks great. Carrie Swanson, Kieran Screeton, Francis Mann, Chris Carter, Blue Nose Stew, Mikey Yuong, Bruce Kerr, Sam Schauer, Rich Evans, Future Media Group FPL, Ben Sweeney, George Kinney, Shiv Majoria, Ram Frosk, AJ, Fly You Fools, Jeremy Spiker, Lazarus Yanos also joined us on, a lot of these people joined us on the Slack this week. Jesse Halstead, Matthew Becker, Khalif Rabi, Todd Byerly, Elper Paxoy, Martin Opseth, Lee Hickman, Valgar Paulson Kruger, Jazz Benny, welcome back, and Francis Moore. Thank you so much, sincerely, to everyone who supports the podcast. And again, we would love for you to become part of the Patreon community. Go to patreon.com/alwayscheating to do so.
And if Patreon's not your bag, a thing you can do to thank us for these podcasts is just jump on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, subscribe, rate, review. You can also follow us wherever you get social media. We're most active via Josh on our Twitter account at Hail Cheaters. Email us, hailcheaters@gmail.com. For all this and more, including the Super League code, our online shop where you can get some t-shirts, sweatshirts, coffee cups, go to alwayscheating.com,
etc. Yeah. Excellent. Well, thanks, everybody. I hope you had a great week. I hope Game Week 2 is just as good. Talk to you soon.
Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid. High amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.